Rainmaker FM is brought to you by Digital Commerce Institute, the premier online resource for discovering smarter ways to create and sell your own profitable digital products and services. Our value-rich charter membership offer ends November 6th, 2015. Find out more at digitalcommerce.com. That's digitalcommerce.com.
Okay, welcome back, everybody, to The Lead, a podcast about content marketing by Rainmaker Digital. The Lead, as always, is hosted by me, Damian Farnworth, and my co-host, Jared Morris, one of the VPs of Rainmaker.fm. And as we mentioned the last episode, we are trying a new format here on The Lead, a format that honors the name Lead, which is actually a journalistic term that refers to the introductory section of a news story that is intended to give readers a summary of the full story. What that means is each week we are going to focus on the top articles and news in the world of content marketing, copywriting, SEO, and so on. We're also going to have a rotating cast of co-hosts on each episode. And so this episode we have the charming, the industrious, and the ever mischievous Chris Garrett, the Chief Digital Officer at Rainmaker Digital, and also one of the hosts from the show, The Mainframe. Howdy, Chris. Why don't you tell us about what your show, The Mainframe, is all about?
Well, first of all, I'd like you to write my LinkedIn profile, please.
I will. I'll be happy to.
From henceforth, you will craft my LinkedIn profile. I'll get lots of leads.
There you go.
Not that I need any. The Mainframe is about all the nerdy side of online marketing, digital business, and especially things like the testing, copywriting, funnel flow, marketing automation, that kind of things. The things that a lot of people find scary, overwhelming, or just too techy, we try to break it down so it's accessible. And we mix in things like Star Wars and comic book references just for the uber nerds amongst everybody.
So now, I know around here things have been hopping mad, and what I mean by that is last Monday we launched Digital Commerce Institute, and the short version is it's an online training course plus a killer live event. Now, is there any way, have you had your hands inside that thing?
I have unfortunately had my hands, elbows, feet, head, all up in that thing.
Okay,
intimately.
So why don't you tell us a little bit what's going on here with DCI, or Digital Content Institute, Digital Commerce Institute?
Yeah, there's a big distinction there. It's all about digital commerce, digital business. It's a hyper focus on just the digital side of everything we do. I mean, Rainmaker Digital rebranded partly because that's what we do. We sell and train through digital, and our products and services are digital based. Even our live event has a digital component because you get video replays in a member area that's all online after the event. So you can catch up with anything that you might have missed. You know, if you needed a bathroom break during the keynote, you don't miss anything because you can play it back. So there's always a digital component. And a lot of our customers want to know how we do what we do. So we're teaching that. Our business has grown massively, completely bootstrapped all through digital business. So we're sharing how to do that, how to build your own.
Yeah, so CopyBlogger's been doing this. I mean, this has pretty much been the roadmap for Brian ever since he launched the blog. CopyBlogger.com back was basically go out there, sort of forge, be a pioneer in that field, and then turn around and sort of teach those coming behind him what he did and how he succeeded. I mean, it's really kind of been that way the whole time, right?
Yeah, and it's not just us. If you look at like lynda.com, sold for something like $1 billion, something crazy. You know, themes, software as a service, plugins, software, apps, all around us, digital business. People kind of assume there's always going to be a digital component anyway. And we have kind of got to this place where it's gone from being scary novelty to being accepted and business as usual. So a lot of people are interested in online education, selling ebooks, membership sites, courses. They see what we do, even down to online coaching. There's a growing need for it and a growing desire for it.
Yeah, so now help me understand a little bit, because I know, like, so you're more on the technical side, and as a writer, for someone who doesn't have the sort of capabilities or abilities or, you know, coding chops or programming, you know, or don't want to spend that money, is do you think digital commerce has become more accessible in that sense? Like, if I wanted to start, you know, a online video training course, things have gotten easier, haven't they?
Oh, totally. You don't have to know anything about programming, coding, cutting up style sheets, even Photoshop now. All the tools are there. I mean, even excluding our tools that we build, obviously the tools we build are for people like us or people who want to be like us, but there's lots of tools out there that make things so much easier. I mean, if you think about the podcasting workflow now, we're recording a conversation over Skype. Mm-hmm. At some point, you'll upload it to the site. It goes to iTunes. You don't need to know how to code XML for the feed, right?
Right, exactly.
It's all transparent. It happens for you.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing. So now before we move on from this Digital Commerce Institute, DCI, do me one favor, though, because I've kind of heard this question going around, is that people are confusing because we have Authority, the Authority the membership site, the training courses, and then now we have DCI. What are the differences?
There's one big difference in that DCI is hyper-focused on digital, whereas Authority and the My Copy Blogger membership, you know, the free component, it's all about content marketing in general, regardless of the type of business you have. Mm-hmm. So building authority, getting people to know and respect you and see you as a trusted advisor, that's really important for any kind of business. But DCI is all about the digital business, selling ebooks, courses, membership sites, software as a service, apps, plugins, that world of digital ones and zeros. So if your business model is about selling ones and zeros or is facilitated through being a digital business, that is the focus of that.
So would it be safe to say that, like, the person that the Authority membership is ideal for is the person who doesn't really know squat about content marketing or online marketing?
Or knows a lot and wants to be a consultant because we've got that certification.
So you can
be the, you know, certified content marketer. So you can actually be, you can quite happily take what we teach, process it through your own personality and lens, and then use it as consulting for other businesses who need content marketing.
So then DCI, is that the side where we teach people how to monetize their blog, their content?
Yeah, they develop online tools, services, products that they sell digitally. So you put in your credit card and out pops an ebook, a membership site, a course, a coaching program maybe. And through the courses that are built into that, you'll learn how to develop digital business from Brian and from Tony and I. You'll learn how to develop sales funnels and automation.
Right, which I think is, because, tell me if I'm wrong though, because I think a lot of people get to this point where they have an audience, they've been blogging, you know, and we all know that blogging in itself, creating content, can be a full-time job, yet you're not getting, you know, until you monetize it, you're not getting paid a penny for it. So that's sort of like, that's the average, you know, kind of plight of the content creators figuring out how to finally monetize that. So now DCI is that's the goal of showing people, like, hey, this is how to do it. And it's really not that hard, right?
Yeah, once you've developed an audience and developed authority, they will tell you what they want and what they need, what the challenges are, what's keeping them up at night. And it's your job to resolve that in a way that they want to invest in with their money and their time. And Brian calls that the minimum viable audience. So with Copyblogger, he didn't monetize it for like a year or something. Tony came along and said, hey, I've got this idea for a course. Do you want to run it with me? And that finally was the thing. Brian did a couple of other things, but that was the big thing that Brian said, yes, this is something that's going to serve a need my audience has. Lots of opportunities came his way that he turned down because it has to be a good fit and it has to be good for his reputation and the trust he's built up. So when Tony came along with this online course, that sold very, very well, believe me.
Because people were primed for that, man. People were basically asking.
Yeah, they're demanding. They were saying, Brian, when can you build something that we can spend money on?
Yeah. I mean, which is a good place to be in, right? I mean, you know, I think we all get kind of afraid. It's like we don't want to corrupt our content by selling things. But people, you know, particularly in the business world and you know, and consumers want, I mean, we want things. So, you know, especially if you're providing good resources, content, stuff like that, people don't mind being sold to, do they?
And if you've got a podcast or if you've got a good, solid blog, then what you're going to be talking about a lot of the time is the what and the why. But you have very little opportunity to go deep into the how. And so an online course or a book, that's how you go into the how, the coaching program, and you lead people by the hand. And so a lot of what people want isn't just information. They want the practical steps, and they want to be led by the hand, and they want access to you. So a lot of what people were demanding was, how do we get more of you, Brian? How do we scoop your brain out?
Because I find that's what people want. I mean, they want access to you, and then, you know, some people are very clearly willing to pay for that sort of access. All right, so what I'll do is I will, if you just go to thelead.fm, you can go to the show notes, and we'll have the link to the article announcing the launch of Digital Commerce Institute, and you can check that out, as Chris said. So the next article, top of the news that we're going to talk about, is an article from Mark Schaefer, where he writes an article called How to Differentiate Your Blog Based on the Time You Can Put It Into It. I thought this was an interesting article. This was published on October 26th, Monday. Like, this is one of those perennial questions. Like, how much time goes into your content? I don't know about you. You know, it's my own question I've asked myself. But, you know, that as being in this business long enough, people tend to, like, so how much time should I put, you know, what kind of time? So what he does, what Mark Schaefer does, is he sort of build this little grid. And he says you can differentiate yourself by frequency and length, right? And so he shows in the low length of content, he puts Seth Godin, low frequency of content and low length of content. I forget who this guy is, Scotty Monty. So those guys who Seth Godin publishes a lot. You read, no doubt, read Seth Godin.
I think it's the law, right? I think we get fined for every article we don't read of it.
Exactly right. So let me ask you a question. So I've always been intrigued by the question of Seth Godin, because I've generally kind of coached people when they talk about, well, Seth Godin's posts are so short, shouldn't I be writing short posts? What do you say to people who make that statement?
The challenge with Seth Godin's approach is it's really difficult to write that short. We do preach brevity, and we tell people, you know, don't say more than necessary. Mm-hmm. But writing as short as Seth does, with the impact that he has, very difficult.
And why is that?
Because technically it's very difficult to say as much as he does in as few words as he does. Mm-hmm. If I had more time, I would write less. That's the famous quote.
Right.
So it's more comfortable for people to just write until they've covered the topic and then write no more and then cut. So it's better to do it in the editing rather than intending to write short in the beginning for a lot of people. So I often coach people to write as if it's an email to a friend, or even write it as an email to a friend. So there's, in computer programming, there's a thing called rubber ducking, where you explain the problem to a rubber duck or some other inanimate object. And in the process of explaining it, you clarify your thinking and you solve your problem without having to engage any other person.
I love that.
So once you've covered it, you can edit down and remove superfluous words. So like this podcast will be edited. A lot of what I say will be removed and it'll make me sound smarter.
Me too.
So I actually went through this process. When I had to restart my blog, it was because I was part of a failed startup. Mm. It actually was very successful until right at the end, as these things tend to, you know, run their course.
Right.
We burnt brightly for a very short time, and we would post long articles 4 times a day.
Wow.
And I knew I couldn't keep up that pace. I knew what people had responded to. One of the reasons why I had Brian Clark as a contact was through that startup and through my writing on there. He would share my stuff. He would reblog it. Mm-hmm. He would link to it in his roundup articles and things. So I knew that's what people wanted from me. I knew I found it difficult to write very short, and that I tend to go on too long. And so it was a combination of what people wanted from me and what I could do. So I decided the way I could provide impact was fewer, longer, more in-depth articles.
Which falls then into the category of, if I can say his name, right? Avinash Kaushik, which he writes at his own blog. He's of Google, and he writes truly epic posts too. I mean, this is low frequency, high length. And I think this is a strategy that a lot of people kind of adapt. And that, as Halpern, he sort of promotes that. So does John Morrow, that idea too. So
if you're not monetizing through eyeballs and clicks and clickbait and advertising, then that for a sort of education consulting expert kind of business model, you should spend more time on providing that impact, that juiciness, that bookmarkability, that shareability, and the promotion of it, because that is what's going to spread your reputation. I don't like the phrase thought leadership, but you're not going to be a leader by doing BuzzFeed articles. That's a completely different type of writing.
Right. Well, so now, do you think that Avinash, could he write short, brief, pithy little posts like Seth Godin and get away with it?
If he's anything like me, he probably isn't wired that way. I tried it. I can tweet.
Did you?
And the thing is, I actually did guest posts for people who have an audience that likes that kind of thing. You know, if I wrote for ProBlogger, my articles on ProBlogger as a guest post were a lot shorter than my posts on my own blog, because that's what they want. That's what they need. So you have to fit to your audience and your market, but you also have to play to your strengths. And one of the reasons why when I rebooted ChrisG.com, I went to those in-depth articles instead was because Brian was there, Darren was there, Pat Flynn was probably around, I guess, at that time.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking 2006, 2007.
Okay.
There was a lot of people out there. There was all the Clue Train people, if you remember the Clue Train Manifesto.
I do.
So it was as noisy to break out as it was then, as it is now. And so to stand out, you do have to differentiate. And part of it is the quality, obviously. But another part is to find your audience, your niche, the people who like what you do. And part of that is how you represent yourself. As you can tell, I go on a long time. I say a lot.
I'm the same way. They always give me a hard time whenever I turn articles in. And like, you know, I got it underneath 2,200 words. And they're like, oh, a short one. So, well, you know, the thing too about like Seth Godin is that he's got also like at least 3 decades of experience behind him. You know, and so he's built that authority. And like, and that's what I tell people is like, listen, you like the thing that drives, because a lot of times Seth Godin, it's not like he says anything like profound or earth shattering, but it's Seth Godin saying it, you know, like I could say the same thing, but nobody's going to pay attention. But when Seth Godin says it, it definitely has that weight of authority that you're like talking about, you know? So clearly, you know, understanding that position, like where you're at on that, you know, spectrum of authority will kind of dictate like you're saying is, you know, what kind of articles you write. And so finally, the high frequency, high length of content is the model that we see like on a site like Social Media Examiner. And again, I mean, they're not doing, because BuzzFeed does have high frequency, but it can also have high content length, but it's clear, like you mentioned before, it's a completely different audience. You're trying to accomplish something completely different. Whereas
it fits into leisure time. BuzzFeed is about your lunch break or your procrastination. And I think Seth, in very many ways, is people's breakfast browsing. It starts the day with a thought.
Yeah, right. Where something like Social Media Examiner, it's like how you want, you know, I mean, like this is when you want to sit down and actually tactically use Facebook notes to drive leads back to your site, you know.
But I actually remember when Social Media Examiner started, because Mike actually came to me with this idea. He says, I've got an idea. I want to pitch it to you. And I told him he was crazy.
Did you?
So just shows what I know. Because he was so ambitious. He wanted to create the social media marketing magazine. Uh-huh. He didn't want to be a social media blog. He wanted to be the online magazine for social media. You can imagine how that was setting the benchmark so high.
Right.
And he did it, but he built a magazine. He built a publishing empire. He didn't say, I want to write about social media. He put together a team and a workflow. And it's sad because Cindy, who was the editor there, she just passed away.
Oh.
She worked solid, like she was like a steam engine. She never stopped, even when she was really ill. Mike's superpower in Social Media Examiner isn't just putting all this together, the organization, it's building a team. Yeah. And to do in-depth every day, you need that team. You can't do it on your own. And you can't just outsource it because they have to be reliable. It's a magazine. It has a publishing schedule. He has multimedia, has a live event. You can't just decide, yeah, I'm going to do in-depth every day and then say I'm going to take a week off.
So Schaefer closes with four questions you were to ask. If you're looking, you know, where is an, like where you should be focusing the frequency and length of content, check out those questions on the article. I'll again drop that link into the show notes. But so the next article, Chris, I want to look at is the one about YouTube. YouTube announced this thing called YouTube Red. And have you heard of it?
I was aware of something and I was a little nervous to click on the link because I'd heard of an adult content site with a similar name.
I was
a little worried what you wanted to go into here.
Oh, right. So yeah, basically it's just a paid subscription for it. Like you can get rid of ads by watching, you know, if you are a heavy consumer of YouTube, you can get rid of ads by simply subscribing to the YouTube Red. And then you can just go, you know, no more 15, 30 second ad rolls before the video start. So, I don't really have much to say about that, except that I thought it was an interesting move. My prediction is it will be successful because I know around our house, there are a number of YouTube channels that we like a lot, but at $10 a pop, I'm not sure that we would lay it down, but I think some people might just to get rid of the ads. What do you think?
I think the ads is not the key selling proposition. It's the unique and exclusive content. And they have been rounding up the video producers to corral them into providing content for Red.
Oh, nice.
You can, with an ad blocker, if you configure it correctly and you choose the right one and you don't choose one that's malware, you can eliminate a lot of ads. So that experience.
On YouTube?
But for anything, you know, if you work hard enough. I mean, there's YouTube downloaders, all of that stuff, all that bad pirate stuff that we don't encourage because we make money from content creation. We should support content creators. So on that level, the honest thing to do is to pay that subscription, but the enticement, the incentive will be the unique exclusive content. And let's face it, a lot of us are doing that anyway. We're paying Patreon, right? We're paying for membership sites. I pay for Netflix.
Yep.
If I was in the United States, I would probably pay for Amazon, the digital from Amazon. With our Amazon subscription, all we get is delivery in Canada. We don't get that digital content. I'm paying Apple for their new music service. A lot of people pay for Spotify. We're paying for it anyway.
Right.
What is it to add $9 a month?
I guess
if you want that content, then you're going to pay it.
Right. I guess it has to be good content because it's somewhat like you mentioned Netflix, and they started creating their own original shows, which was, like you said, another enticement, but it's got to be good. So I like that. So is there anything?
And I'm already paying for YouTube content through Patreon.
I'm
supporting people who create YouTube videos on YouTube. I'm just not paying them through YouTube. So I think what it'll do is take a lot from Patreon. It'll take a bit from Netflix. It'll take a bit from Hulu.
Yeah. So is there any lessons in this move for content creators, particularly those who are, sort of creating the videos?
I think if even Google can't make as much money as they need to through ads, then that tells you something big about I think it's a natural progression and they'll try it. In the past, I've said it'll be successful because it's Google and then saw the thing go down in flames. So I'm not going to say that.
Right.
But I think they have to try it. And I think they have the content creators and they have the ability, they have the technology, they have the reach. It's on every set-top box platform, smartphone, tablet. They're in everybody's home already.
Right.
And anybody that's seen a kid under the age of 13, especially Minecraft addicted, knows the power of YouTube.
Yes, amen. All right, so let's switch gears here. And this is a little grimish topic. It's so what do you make of the South by Southwest decision to cancel some gaming panels over what were numerous threats on that came in on on-site violence. So like these, they were warned, threatened that if they ran these panels, which were on online harassment, that there would be violence there at the actual event. Have you heard about this?
I've heard about it, and it's very concerning, and it will actually harm attendance from certain vulnerable people, and I think that's terrible. The whole thing is kind of scary, and it's very difficult, and it's not something that in the short podcast we'll be able to resolve. I just think it shows the ugly side of the internet, especially when the ugly side of the internet spills over into the real world. And it's not just South by Southwest that's being challenged by this. It's Twitter, it's Facebook, it's, you know, every forum or community at some point has bad actors. But when they can group together and bully and abuse and threaten, that goes to a whole new level. And I don't know what anybody's going to do about it, because at the same time, we don't want to lose our free internet, our free speech, our ability to share ideas, no matter how uncomfortable. So there's got to be a balance there, and I don't know what it is.
So do you think people, because there was quite a reaction by this decision, some people said that what you're doing is you're silencing those who have been victims of the harassment. And in some ways, I mean, like South by Southwest is playing into the hands of the harassers. Exactly what, you know, it's terrorism, right?
I mean, it's pandering to the worst of society. But at the same time, what do you do as South by Southwest? You've got a duty of care to the attendees.
That's right.
And your employees. You know, we have our own event. What would we do? I don't know. And I'm glad I'm not Brian, because it's Brian that would have to decide that. I would like to think that we'd make it an inclusive and safe and comfortable environment. But how do you do it? And all I can think is extra security. But then, as I say, that presence of extra security changes the tone.
Yes.
So it's a very difficult topic. It just shows that when these things get out of hand, they really get out of hand. So you have to try as best as you can to set the tone early on and moderate your environment and set the standard of interaction as soon as you can.
Yeah, it's really, you know, quite an unfortunate part about the internet that we talk about free speech, but, you know, that how ugly people can be and how hateful, and, you know, it's very, very disturbing. And like you said, I mean, so we have a responsibility for that kind of stuff at the same time. It's like, you know, you want to maintain that freedom of speech that, you know, all opinions can be shared, but at what points, where's the balance? So I'll be interested in seeing how this further develops out of that. All right. Well, hey, Chris, that does it for this week. Thank you so much for joining me, man. And audience, if you haven't already done it, go listen to Chris and Tony's show. It's called The Mainframe. Just visit mainframe.fm and leave them a rating and review too on iTunes when you get a chance. Thanks again so much, Chris, for joining me.
Always a pleasure.
If you want to leave us a rating and review on iTunes for The Lead, that's a great way to show support. And thank you for everyone who's already done that. And thank you for listening. And we look forward to seeing you next week on another episode of The Lead, where I'll be joined by none other than Sean, our Texan CFO, Jackson, to talk about the articles and issues that you need to know about then. So until then, take care, everybody. Thank you.